Ken Forrester, Executive Director at Momenta. Welcome to our Digital Thread podcast, produced by, for, and about digital industry leaders. In this series of conversations, we capture insights from the best and brightest minds in digital industry. They're executives, entrepreneurs, advisors, and other thought leaders. What they have in common is, like our team at Momenta, they are deep industry operators. We hope you find these podcasts informative, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Good day and welcome to episode 203 of our Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. Today, I'm pleased to host Julio Mastroni, the former Chief Commercial Officer of Power Digital at GE Digital. Julio is a senior executive with over 26 years of experience scaling and leading global businesses across energy management sectors, from decarbonization and electrification to decentralization and digitalization. Julio has become a trusted advisor to many in the industry as companies and governments outline paths to achieve more sustainable, competitive, affordable, and dependable uses of energy. Julio most recently served as the Global Chief Customer Officer of GE Digital Power Generation. Prior, he held leadership positions in diverse GE energy businesses spanning from technology ventures and product development to the introduction of new business models and leading large global operations. Born in Italy and educated in Argentina, Julio has worked over 17 years in the U.S. and is now based in London. Julio, welcome to our Digital Thread podcast.
Hey, Ken. Great to be here.
Great to have you. This is obviously a very important topic when we talk about energy and decarbonization and net zero and everything that goes with that. So I'm really excited to have you. As you know, we call this the Digital Thread podcast. And so we always like to start asking, what's your digital thread? In other words, the one or more thematic threads that define your digital industry journey.
Yeah. So my digital thread, I think, is probably shared with a number of other people like me. For the last probably 10, 15 years, I've been engaged in deploying digital solutions and trying to make sense of data. I think, you know, if I have to mention a few key elements of a digital thread, I think I have to start with the proliferation of lower cost and better sensors. I think that really enabled the ability to track failure mechanisms and performance of equipment, really understanding whether equipment is working too close to the boundaries or there is some level of conservatism. The next one is development and really the proliferation of advanced algorithms and analytical capabilities. And that was really important for businesses because it really paved the way for data to become information and for information to become intelligence and insights to facilitate really decision making. And the last one is the ability to democratize data that came with cloud computing and cheaper data storage type capabilities. I think data was limited to certain facilities and or certain organizations. And with cloud computing and storage, I think a lot of that data and information was cross-pollinated across businesses. So these three combined, you know, the sensors, the algorithms and analytics and cloud solutions, I think they help redefine life management for assets, for physical assets. And I think this is quite relevant for energy companies. From the perspective of really finding a way to reduce operating costs, understand how to manage risk for the operation of those physical assets. And then equally important is the ability to understand what I call the art of the possibilities on how equipment can be operated to generate revenue for the business. So I think this is one side of the equation. The other side is for companies to have the ability to triangulate between operability to generate revenue, cost, and risk. So companies can make the right decision at the right time. And this is something that is becoming critically important, I think is crucial for the energy transition, a transition that will really force a number of businesses to flex their muscles, okay, and be extremely opportunistic in the marketplace. So the ability to make the right decision at the right time to capture market opportunities will be one of the important things that will dictate whether companies will succeed or not through the energy transition. And Ken, this might sound a bit provoking, but in the last number of years, I'm still seeing a number of businesses that are really not embracing digital transformations. And they're just trying to digitize adjacent and non-core areas and do pilots before embarking on a meaningful transformation. And I think, you know, the energy transition, the clock for the energy transition, I think, is ticking, and there is an urgent need to really retool operations for many businesses.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that latter matter. You know, it reminds me that back in COVID, when there was this meme floating around LinkedIn that basically was this checklist, who's leading your digital transformation? You know, CEO, you know, option one, option two, CDO, option three, COVID. And in essence, COVID drove a lot of digitization of at least, you know, remote working, if you will, and remote asset management, much more so than, you know, probably would have been the organic approach. And I sense this is the same thing is happening in energy now, especially post the Ukrainian conflict there. So all of that to say, I'm really glad we're talking today, because I think, you know, I know you've been a lifelong practitioner in energy. And what I appreciate, leadership roles in both the physical and digital assets, you know, asset businesses that go with it. So let's jump into that. What's your view on the ongoing energy transition?
I mean, I'm really excited by just being a participant in the energy transition. I think the next probably decade or two will be seen in history as, you know, pivotal moments. It's an inflection point, a moment that will reshape really the landscape of geopolitics as we know them. And the geopolitics today are largely defined by sources of energy. So the source of energy and the independency of energy sources will be really reshape the forces in the market to a large extent. And personally, I'm extremely happy to be, you know, as an engineer and a business person, to be part of it, okay? I think I'm happy to be alive, okay, this time in history and contribute to the extent of the possibilities for the deployment of new technologies, for the proliferation of cleaner alternatives to the way we consume, store, generate electricity, and manage energy in general. So this energy transition, I think, will hopefully mean a significant reduction in the use and the economic dependencies on fossil fuels, and specifically, you know, the combustion of oil and coal and gas and a number of other derivatives. I think this is quite interesting. The combustion could, to a large extent, become an old-fashioned word as other cleaner and lower-cost electricity-based technologies emerge and proliferate in the market. So just look at what's going on with the electrical vehicles versus the ICE vehicles, you know, the internal combustion engine vehicles. EVs are not just cleaner, but will be cheaper to own and will really play a critical role in energy markets with potential to really redefine the energy management space with tools and concepts like V2H, which is vehicle to home, or vehicles that provide power for our households, or vehicle to grid, which is when vehicles really provide electricity back to the grid, or just as transportation as a service is driven by, you know, the autopilot and a number of different automation type activities and technologies that companies are developing. So it's really exciting times.
You mentioned geopolitical forces. Let's click down on that one. What are the key competing geopolitical forces, and I should say imperatives in the energy markets?
Yeah, so I will say sustainability is really the core objective of the energy transition and really the driving force. But deciding on a transition roadmap is going to be something unique to every country, and probably one of the most complex decisions countries will need to face. It is not as simple as just deciding to deploy renewables and storage technologies and carbon capture and hydrogen and a variety of other technologies into the roadmap. This solution is going to need to be a well-crafted compromise that looks into a number of different factors with really strong interdependency. From one side, can energy in general, but electricity in particular, is going to need to be competitive for businesses. And, you know, why competitive for businesses is because if you look into manufacturing for the last, I don't know, 100 years plus, the location for manufacturing has primarily gravitated towards areas of lower labor costs. But with all the AI development and automation, that automation will make electricity become one of the key elements of manufacturing costs, even beyond labor costs. So companies will likely transition their manufacturing facilities to countries where lower cost of electricity exists. So competitive supply of electricity is becoming really, really important on a geopolitical level. The next one is affordability for people. That's for obvious reasons. The next one is accessibility for all, we still have about 800 plus million people on a global scale that don't have access to electricity. And the last one is the dependability, the availability and the reliability of electricity and energy sources with adequate reserve margins and reduced dependencies from external supplies. So I think it is really fascinating to see how more than fossil fuels, mining and the capability of processing natural resources like nickel and copper and cobalt and lithium, et cetera, are becoming really stronger sectors that will need to reshape the geopolitics in the future in a similar fashion to what fossil fuels have done today.
We've often discussed what we call the three R's that are most impactful for us: remote asset management, resilience, and renewables. The latter two of which directly impact Europe, given Russia's legal and moral invasion of the Ukraine. To what degree are these trends driving future business, especially in energy?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the conflict in Ukraine. I think, you know, if anything, the conflict has amplified really the need for to accelerate the energy transition across Europe. And it really has exacerbated the need for energy independence. And the situation is becoming really a clear example for many countries of the important strategic nature of renewables and the need to diversify energy supplies and reserves. Specifically from an energy management, from an asset management standpoint, I will say what's interesting is that for every conventional, which is nuclear, coal, and gas fuel power plants that shut down, there will be hundreds, if not thousands, of pieces of renewable equipment, whether centralized or distributed. And how those assets need to be managed is going to be significantly different to the way we manage conventional power generation. So renewable equipment is orders of magnitude simpler than conventional facilities. There are less moving parts. The pieces of equipment that make up a wind farm or solar facility are identical and repeat in the tens, if not hundreds. The failure modes that need to be monitored are a fraction of what we need to monitor for a nuclear facility, coal and gas power plants. So renewable assets are really simpler to manage from a cost and risk perspective compared to conventional plants. But the complexity really comes from the need to orchestrate their use, given the exponentially higher number of those assets that need to be managed, and given their variable nature in the way they produce electricity and the way they contribute to a grid that's going to become soon bidirectional. You know, the flow of electricity that has historically gone in one direction is going to be coming from consumers to the grid and from the traditional power generation back to the grid. So the complexity is going to increase exponentially. And this is where digital technologies will really play a very important role, because that ecosystem that is quite complex is going to become exponentially more complex. Like a good friend of mine who's a CEO of a utility said to me a couple months ago, he said, hey, success or failure for utilities would not only depend on their choice of physical assets, but equally important in their ability to outline and deploy digital solutions to enable more accurate and faster decision making as companies orchestrate a more complex, you know, electricity ecosystem. So I think those are the things that really resonate, because a lot of people are focusing on the physical assets. Where do we invest in technology, but not a lot of people are really focusing on the need to orchestrate this complex ecosystem we call the grid as we deploy and proliferate with all these technologies.
What about net zero and decarbonization? Can you say a little bit about both of those industry trends or targets?
Yeah, so net zero and decarbonization, probably the most important sector to decarbonize is the generation of electricity. Decarbonizing the generation of electricity comes from the proliferation of renewables. And in many territories and geographies, renewables are now the cheapest source of electricity. Just an example, in the U.S., renewables are cheaper than 99% of all the coal power plants in the U.S. and are really, in many cases, cheaper also compared to the operating costs of natural gas power generation equipment. So renewables, you know, we got to remind ourselves that renewables is capital intensive in the front end, but we don't pay for the wind to blow and the sun to shine. So from an operating cost perspective, they are a fraction of the cost of the to operate compared to the traditional technologies. what's interesting about the adoption of renewables is that they require incremental grid balancing resources. So the intermittent and variable nature of renewables that sometimes we see the wind blowing and winter generate electricity and the sun shining and solar, you know, generate electricity. When the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine, somebody has to balance the grid. And these are important mechanisms that exist in the grid. So to a certain extent, the proliferation of renewables is potentially limited by the ability of different grids to manage these balancing activities. So the objective is to avoid issues with quality of service and service interruptions that will lead to potential brownouts and blackouts. So these are the things that are really important to explore. There are a number of technologies that are being invested and deployed for storage that will really help balancing the grids. There is short duration and long duration storage. And I can really envision a future where generation and consumption could potentially decouple, where you will not need to generate electricity at the time the electricity is being consumed, but you can generate and store and eventually consume. And on the other side is equally important, the ability for consumers to shift load from areas and hours where the cost of electricity is higher to hours where the cost of electricity gets reduced.
Let me ask you to put your prognosticator hat on. In addition to decarbonization and net zero you mentioned, what are the other key trends and disruption that you see relative to energy in general and digital in particular over the next 10 years?
Yeah, so decarbonization of, I think I mentioned this before, decarbonization of power generation is probably the most significant, meaningful contribution to sustainability. And it is really well underway with renewables and storage technology. The decarbonization of transportation is also well positioned with the proliferation and really exponential growth of electrical vehicles. But then we see a number of different paths to really become more sustainable. One comes with electrification. Electrification is another important series of technologies that will proliferate in different marketplaces to drive sustainability over the next probably 10 years. This mostly comes with the adoption of heat pumps to replace fossil fuels for heating purposes, whether it's household, whether it's commercial facilities or industrial. Heat pumps consume 1/3 to 1/4 of the energy required to heat a house using a gas boiler. So for industrial heating processes, really heat pumps are a great option for applications up to close to 200 degrees C for heating industrial processes. The next one is decentralization, and it's also something that's ongoing and will accelerate over the next few years. So the adoption of rooftop solar, battery storage, heat pumps, and the proliferation of EVs at the consumer level. And to a large extent, thanks to incentives like the IRA in the US, I think those things will really pave the way to decarbonize the economy and provide instruments and resources to better manage the grid. And last, but certainly not least, is digitalization. I think the exponential growth of assets in grids that are going to need to be managed, whether those assets are centrally located or distributed, that's going to increase the overall complexity, and this bidirectional flow of electricity will make it even more complex. So digital technologies will be absolutely instrumental in our ability to facilitate the deployment of technologies and make sure that this orchestration of grid resources happen in an optimum way.
It's actually a good kind of circle back point. You started off the conversation in terms of your digital thread, talking about sensors effectively and how to connect and orchestrate, if you will, the grid. What I was impressed with in your background is you were involved in digital technologies relatively early in the energy sector, basically leading software and analytics as early as 2009, interesting enough, for GE. This was pretty formative time for the application of digital and energy. What were some of the key use cases of which you're most proud from that time?
Yeah, for us, the process started with questioning whether we were using the data that we used to get access to in the most efficient way to really capture information and insights from markets and from customers, and how to get back to customers with more value in the way they were managing physical assets in their businesses. So this was an exercise of defining IoT before IoT was even a term. And I'm really, the portion that I'm most proud of is our ability to really deploy technologies, deploy solutions in the market, and be customer-centered. The exercise was probably 100% an outside-in approach. And we put ourselves in the customer's shoes to understand the market, understand business issues and opportunities, to then develop and co-create, in some cases, solutions with them. So we deployed a number of solutions and a platform. The platform was an OT platform that was really consuming data from physical assets on a global scale. And that platform had a number of applications that were embedded in the platform that were really capturing data from operating assets and turning data into information to really have better visibility to manage risk, understand operating profiles, and really support customers. Part of the interesting things that we did is we created a benchmarking type tool where enabled people to understand how their assets were performing relative to other similar assets in the industry. So I think it was an important moment, not necessarily from a revenue standpoint for the company. I think it was minuscule, really, in the context of how big GE, you know, is. The importance of that exercise 12 years ago was the IP, the clarification and the understanding of the art of the possibilities on how software and analytical technologies can enable more value to be created for customers and in the market. So part of the exercise that we ran was to question ourselves, you know, is this only applicable for power generation, or there are other industries that could potentially benefit from the same approach? And probably 9 out of 10 businesses that we look, or industries we look, the answer was yes, you know, the same concept could be applicable to them. So I think I don't want to claim that this was the only reason why GE ventured into digital, but it was one of the important proof points that convinced all of us that there was something beyond just providing physical assets. There was something through technology and something through software and analytics that will enable the company to really create more value in the market, value that customers can capitalize, and improve their overall operations.
You made a provocative statement a little bit earlier about digital transformation and its relative progress. Could you say a little bit more about that? I'd be interested, you know, how you see that applying toward energy particularly.
Yeah, so digital transformation, not everyone is a pioneer in digital transformation. And I don't think, not all the companies need to be a pioneer in digital transformation. But I think as we look into the energy transition, companies are going to need to be more flexible. They're going to need to really find a way to accelerate decision-making processes. The markets will become more volatile. The more we see renewables participating in generating electricity, the price of electricity will become volatile. And we've seen that in a number of different markets in California, in Germany, here in the UK. And the ability to really be opportunistic in those markets and really find a way to position the assets and position the operation to capture opportunities will become critical for the success or not of those of the businesses. So what I've seen is that not everyone is sort of embracing digital technologies and they're focusing more on physical assets. And that's going to become crucial for the industry in general, for those companies that have not adopted digital technologies. Again, I think being able to make those decisions at the right time will really dictate who's going to be successful or not as we navigate the next probably 5 to 10 years.
I appreciate that. Look, I know you were involved early and often in your GE career in startups, and I'm kind of curious, what are some of the more interesting startups that you're following these days?
Yeah, there are proliferation of startups, so it's almost impossible to mention all of them. There are a number of different things that are really fascinating to me these days. One side is on the retail, as companies face consumers, and consumers will be called prosumers because they're going to have the ability to really decide when to consume, when to store, and when to give electricity back to the grid. And there are a number of different companies that are exploring the market, developing technologies. I don't know if those are necessarily startups. They were probably startups a number of years ago, but what I'm fascinated on the retail side, just to mention a couple from here in the UK, I really love what Kraken, which is owned by Octopus, and Calusa, which is owned by OVO, are doing from a retail standpoint, managing the interface with consumers and supporting grid operators. I think they have platforms that can become important for the retail business. But I think the opportunity for these companies is to really extrapolate and really explore markets on a global scale. In summary, is how to replicate what they're doing with their utility and retail portion of the business and offer the same solutions on a global scale. I also like, you know, what Piclo is doing here in the UK too, with flexibility markets and how to tap into a number of different resources that were not available for balancing markets and flexibility. So Piclo is one of those companies that I had a few discussions before, and I'm tracking their progress. I'm also really interested on storage, specifically on long duration storage. The shorter duration storage is dominated mostly by hydro pump and lithium ion batteries, but really interested in long duration storage, storage that can provide power for days, if not weeks. And I'm following a number of different companies. If I have to mention two of them, is the first one is Form Energy. I think they have a really interesting technology with multi-day storage, iron air batteries, which is low cost and high discharge efficiency. The second one is a really early stage company. It's called Noon Energy. And again, similar long duration storage type technology with low cost, with dense batteries and really good discharge efficiency. So I'm going to be following up on their progress and try to see where the startup is going and how the technology is really expanding the market. And then on the digital side, I think there are too many to mention, to be honest. I think there is probably one that I will say is, again, very, very early stage, and it's called Molecule Systems. Molecule Systems has quite promising edge computing capabilities with flexible architecture and really easy to deploy and manage. And I mentioned Molecule Systems because I feel the future is going to depend on not only cloud computing abilities, but also edge computing type capabilities. I think the ability to connect different energy resources from a household, whether it's a heat pump or charging an EV or air conditioning and heating for the house, I think is going to depend on a number of edge computing type capabilities to really connect the dots and make sense of all the data that's coming, and the interaction between edge computing and cloud computing to really optimize the energy management space. So Molecule System is really, really early stage, but one of those companies that I feel that can play a significant role in the market.
Excellent. We will certainly check them out. So knowing that you've recently left your role with GE, what's next for you?
Yeah, I worked with GE through the end of 2022, and I'm now in the market. So I'm looking at spending really time and evaluating the next chapter in my career, looking at consulting, which is quite an attractive thing, something that I've done without necessarily calling myself a consultant, but something that I've done through probably the last 10 plus years. And on the other side, I really feel the opportunity to collaborate with private equity and venture capital type companies. Through my career, I have scaled startups and I have run large operations. I restructure businesses. I understand how to really connect the dots. And I want to bring my two cents into the way private equity and venture companies are exploring the marketplace and deciding where to invest or not and how to operate those businesses to really scale those businesses in the marketplace.
Well, it sounds like you're in the right place at the right time with the right skill set and relationship. So I'm sure there'll be lots of opportunities popping up, and even I think Momentum may have an opportunity to engage you. So in closing, I always like to ask, where do you find your personal inspiration?
I'm probably consuming a lot of content, and something that is not new. I've been sort of dedicating time trying to understand where disruption could come from, trying to see around corners and trying to understand what are the technological forces and the business models that will really disrupt businesses as we know them. And part of what I've sort of consumed in the last probably few years is a number of books, and I've been listening to a number of podcasts, and I probably read a book every 2 weeks. So it's hard to list all of them, but I'm trying to find the right balance between people from different perspectives and different opinions. So a few of the ones that I have read in the last probably 6-7 months is How the World Really Works. That's Vaclav Smil. That's an interesting view and a really nice perspective on energy and the future of energy. The other one, which is a bit old, but I think is extremely relevant these days, is called The Inevitable by Kevin Kelly, which really illustrates and provides a lot of insight on technological forces and how those will reshape the future. Also, Electrify by Saul Griffith and Winning on Purpose. That's really important. An important book for me is by Fred Richel, which is from Bain and the creator of NPS Score, Net Promoter Score, is how to really drive an operation, putting customers at the center stage of what businesses do, which I think is going to be extremely important for the energy transition and for companies to succeed in this environment. And I'm now reading No Miracles Needed by Mark Jacobson from Stanford, which is quite a really optimistic view that I pretty much share on the opportunities with renewables, opportunity with storage, and how that potentially could transform the energy landscape as we know it. And podcasts, I'm listening to a number of them. I'm very much into sports and running and swimming. So every time I go and do sports, I put my headset and listen to podcasts. So I'm consuming The Catalyst, The Carbon Copy, The Interchange, and Columbia Energy Exchange. I think those are the few that I listen most frequently.
Awesome. Great recommendations. And we will have links to all of those in the bio that associates with the podcast. So, Julio, thank you for sharing this time and insights with us today.
Thank you again. And it was great sharing these few minutes with you in this dialogue.
As well. And again, very timely topic. So this has been Julio Mastroni, the former chief commercial officer of Power Digital at GE Digital. Thank you for listening. And please join us for the next episode of our Digital Thread podcast series. Thank you and have a momentous day. You've been listening to the Momentit Digital Thread podcast series. We hope you've enjoyed the discussion, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Please check our website at momentit.one for archive versions of podcasts, as well as resources to help with your digital industry journey. Thank you for listening.